The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
We'll stick with COVID now, but want to talk about sport because Joe Malloy of Off the Ball is with me. And Joe, like, sport has not escaped the tentacles of the coronavirus. So let's have a chat about the impact of this third wave, both here in Ireland, in Europe and globally as well. And let's talk first about the Australian Open in Melbourne. What's the latest there on all these players in quarantine?
Well, yeah, as you rightly say, nobody's escaping, and the Australian Open is feeling the effects of trying to bring together players and support staff from all over the world. If essentially what's happened is a bunch of players and their support staff arrived on 3 to 4 planes where it turned out there was a positive case on the plane. Not necessarily one of the players, just somebody else on the plane. Now, it turns out one of the players has subsequently tested positive. But in effect, Australia, as Rob Kearney can attest and anybody else who's been over there in the last while, are pretty strict on quarantine. So straight away, what we have, Kieran, are 70 plus players into strict quarantine in their hotels in Melbourne. They're bouncing off the walls, literally. There are footage on social media of all these players with their rackets out, having rallies against the wall. There are no balconies. They are not allowed to open the door. Their food is delivered and tone deaf in parts. But we're seeing, you know, some videos emerging from hotel rooms of people very, very frustrated. And a couple of them broke rules and tried to almost just get out, maybe for their own sanity. And they were promptly warned that deportation was next if they do that again. So the Australian public at large have not reacted with much sympathy to the complaining, to say the least. First world problems, like there was a girlfriend of one of the players bemoaning the fact that she doesn't wash her hair herself. You know, that's just not something she does. And so she was, you know, showing to the camera her terrible hair situation and saying she can't quite, take much more of it. She needs to get it washed professionally. So you can imagine the reaction from, a city that has had, you know, Melbourne's had a really tough time.
Yeah.
The added layer to all this is that, and this is the way in tennis more so than lots of sports, but there are the haves and the have-nots. So some of the bigger names, Novak Djokovic, Naomi Osaka, Rafa Nadal, have pitched up in Adelaide. And whereas the poor suckers in Melbourne were allowed a support staff of two, you know, Djokovic has an entourage of 10 with him and a 5-hour window to go outdoors and to practice.
Oh, wow. So, just because there's different rules in different states.
Yeah, and I would presume as well that they were chartering their own private flights. I would presume that is a part of it. So it's a bit of a mess. I mean, for those 70-plus players, they have, I think they're into day 2 or 3, but it's a 2-week lockdown, strict quarantine. They cannot move. Like I said, they're trying to keep fit in their hotel rooms. And the moaning has just started. It's not an easy thing to do, to be fair. I mean,
no. Well, when does the tournament start?
It starts Monday, 8th of February. So they have time. I mean, they'll have to get their fitness back and all the rest of it. But the tournament doesn't look like it's going to be delayed. So 8th of February, and they should, you know, touch wood, be out of there in the nick of time.
All right. Listen, closer to home then, we have seen matches like Everton Aston Villa cancelled in the Premier League or delayed just this weekend. Gone by a couple of other games as well, like a significant enough outbreak there in Everton at their club. How much wriggle room is built into the club schedule? Like, did they expect this at the beginning of the year, the Premier League season, and allow some games to be deferred? Or at what point does it begin to kind of snowball?
I think in the main, Premier League level anyway, whatever about the lower leagues, Premier League officials are pretty happy with the situation. They had anticipated games being cancelled. They had anticipated positive tests. And there is some wiggle room, if not loads. The Euros obviously complicate matters this year. Euros are due to start on June 11th. The Premier League is due to finish on the 23rd of May. They'll squeeze in the games. I mean, that's just the nature of these things. And there'll be managers bemoaning the schedule, and probably with good cause. But they will, barring disaster, manage to finish this season pretty close to the 23rd of May. There was a time, Kieran, around Christmas when this third wave was really on the move, when the number of positive cases per week across the Premier League were starting to rise. So there was a period in December where it went 6 a week. The following week was 7 a week. Then it jumped to 18. And then about 2 weeks ago, it jumped to 40. And, you know, that was starting to look like not a great pattern. And thankfully, the following week, it retreated back into the 30s. So nobody was using phrases like exponential growth. So in the main, I think they're delighted. When you consider the number of games, the number of people involved in close proximity, traveling up and down the country, the number of games cancelled is so far very manageable. There's an interesting discussion happening at the moment about the optics over things like goal celebrations. You know, government and football have clashed right the way through this, it seems. And, you know, Gary Neville's accused the government of using football in many ways as a, you know, PR exercise and opium of the masses and distracting the masses, and then at the same time giving it a kicking when it suits them. Of late, the government have kind of said, look, you need to stop the goal celebrations, and football in the main has reacted with a degree of shrugging of shoulders, hostility to that. Sam Allardyce said there's no scientific reason whatsoever. You know, nobody's caught COVID so far from celebrating a goal or playing a match. We're still going to see players celebrating. Yeah. It's a bit of a storm.
It's such a distraction, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure Sam Allardyce is wrong. I'm sure, like, if someone bothered, they could find evidence that climbing all over each other probably is contrary to good public health advice or sound public health advice. But at the same time, they're in a dressing room beforehand. They're in a dressing room afterwards. They're training together all the time. They're kind of in a bubble, these guys.
And that is their attitude. Look, we're in a bubble. We're all over each other anyway. So a 10-second goal celebration is really not a big deal. Now, I have to say, I do think optics are important. And any of us who've been out and about in our lives are still encountering people who are behaving as if we haven't been in a pandemic for the last however long. It feels like a decade.
Yeah, fair point.
So, you know, there is an argument if you're a behavioral scientist or if you're at government level, you're saying, well, this is an unbelievably high-profile vehicle. You know, it would be a good reminder for everybody that we're still in a pandemic and we have to change our behavior if these lads were behaving like that. Instead, we see, you know, goal celebrations, hugs. So I guess it depends to what extent you believe optics are important. The footballers at the moment are saying, look, go away.
On Saturday fortnight, the Six Nations is meant to start. Will it start?
So far, so good. The Six Nations will depend on two things primarily at the moment. One, the number of outbreaks, and secondly, the French government's level of comfort. So there is, at club level, so the Leinsters and the Munsters and English clubs and French clubs, there is the European Cup. And rounds 3 and 4 of that were cancelled, primarily because the French government said, nah, we're not sending our teams to, in particular, England at the moment. Although, you know, we have the English strain of this thing or the British strain of this thing every bit as much as they do at this stage. So that's why rounds 3 and 4 of the Heineken Champions Cup are not going ahead. What the French government have said about the Six Nations is they're happy enough for round 1 to go ahead when the French team are in Rome. But week 2 in Dublin, week 3 in London, they're not saying it's in massive danger, but they're reserving the right. Let's put it that way. So that's up in the air a little bit. Now, it's much easier, much, much easier to keep tabs on one French team going to one destination as opposed to a bunch of French teams at club level going to a bunch of different destinations. So French government levels of comfort, one, and then outbreaks. And that's, you know, that's for every sport to grapple with. There is always the possibility of a phone call on the Friday night that somebody's come down with something. Stephen Kenny will tell you all about that. So that remains to be seen. That's the big issue at the moment. Should mention the women's Six Nations and the men's under 20s has been postponed. I mean, the primary reason for the women's postponement is that they are, aside from England, French are semi-professional, but aside from England, who are professional, the other teams are amateur. So some of them work on the front line here in Ireland.
Yeah.
In terms of protocol and testing, they didn't feel it was possible. So it's going ahead, the Six Nations, but there's a watch this space with everything.
Okay, look, I want to talk about GAA, but very briefly, and this maybe is the most difficult one to answer. The Olympics, like, still due to happen. When is it meant to begin?
July 23rd August 8th, and then the Paralympics, August 24th. So July 23rd. Well, I mean, a few things on this. They're saying if it doesn't happen this year, then it's a cancellation as opposed to a postponement. So it's this year or never. It's been cancelled, the Olympics, that is. It's been cancelled 3 times previously, 1916, 1940, and 1944. I presume your listeners can guess why. So at the moment, it depends who you're listening to. Certainly, the general public in Tokyo, really, like, akin to the Melbourne population looking on at these tennis players, Tokyo don't want it. The people of Tokyo, generally, there have been any number of surveys now, you're talking between 75 to 80% in the surveys just don't think this should go ahead. They're in the midst, I just had a look, they're in the midst of surging infections. They're in a bad place, a state of emergency over large portions of the population. So you can imagine the mood over there right now. Obviously, logistics are enormous for something like this. So decisions will have to be made early. Decision on whether or not spectators can go, and like you're talking 7 million tickets sold here for this thing. Decision on spectators will be made February or March, and that decision will be final. What they're saying as well, Yoshiro Mori, he's the head of the Tokyo Organizing Committee, former Prime Minister. You know, he's saying they have a toolbox of measures, quote, that will ensure the safety of 15,000 athletes. See, that's the other thing. You're bringing, I mean, look what's happened with tennis. You're bringing 15,000 athletes. Tennis, you know, we have 74 in quarantine at the moment. So 15,000, that's, you know, the logistics. And another couple, how many tens of thousands of officials as well, Kieran? You can only imagine. I mean, Dick Pound, formerly of the IOC, now he's kind of based in Canada. He was raising the possibility of, well, maybe athletes should be vaccinated to really allow this thing go ahead. I don't know what you think. I mean, from a PR point of view, when you consider there'll be parts of the world who won't see a vaccine probably this year, the optics of young, fit, healthy athletes getting in front of the queue for vaccinations will cause some discord. So yeah. Japan's not due to start vaccinating. It's 126 million people till February at the earliest. So Olympics, I think you're a big Olympic fan. My educated guess is, who the hell knows?
Yeah, who the hell knows? I, for some reason, and maybe it is just because I'm a fan, it's those are the athletes I feel sorriest for if there is a cancellation. Our Olympians who had been aiming
it's
for
a
this.
It's 1 in 4 year. It's a lifetime's work in many cases coming down to this one. You know, some Kenneth Egan got to 1 Olympic Games. He has a silver medal, but for some, they may be of a certain age. This is their work of a lifetime, effectively. So, you know, it's tougher than a GAA championship being cancelled or a Premier League championship or Premier League season being cancelled. So, yeah, look, I mean, you'd have sympathy, but I mean, look, there's lots of people in the world more deserving of sympathy right now. It's, you know, sport has to keep some kind of perspective. And I hope the Olympics don't lose sight of that and start bemoaning, you know, we should get vaccines and we should get this priority and that priority. There has to be a degree of perspective too.
The GAA then, before I let you go briefly, I'm sure every inter-county panellist up and down the country has a training programme that they've been provided and they're already training absolutely all on their own, and none of them, I'm sure, are ever meeting up to do it. But they were meant to be officially meeting up now. At what point do the GAA say, ugh, you know, that master schedule of fixtures that we're all so proud of and this big experiment, the split season, at what point do they begin to tear up the corners of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, the GAA have a lot more wiggle room than most organisations in that they're in total control of the calendar. It's not like Premier League battling it out with UEFA, who have the European Championships, for instance. So the plan at the moment is for the league, Inter-County Alliance Leagues, to start last weekend of February. Now, they could push that back 2 weeks pretty easily without causing any real disruption. So that's, you know, a positive. And they've changed the league somewhat this year. So, you know, Division 1 is not Division 1 as we know it. It's Division 1 North. So you have Donegal, Tyrone, Armagh, Monaghan to cut down on travel. There is some discord when it comes to playing the leagues, as in just the sheer cost. I mean, and Michael Deignan, who's the Offaly chairman, has talked about this, just effectively saying, we don't have any money. You know, if we're not going to have gate receipts, and the cost is huge, you're talking about 20 grand a week, apparently, 20 grand a week to prepare an inter-county team by 10 weeks. So you need 200 grand out of nowhere without gate receipts. And that is obviously a lot of money. So the leagues, there's the help aspect, and then there's the finances, and the GAA will probably have to help out some of the smaller counties. And then we're into championship. The plan is to have this, and it's a new format, have it wrapped up by mid-July, and then the club season will start, and the club season will run until December. I think there'll be great flexibility here, Kieran, and we saw that last year.
Yeah.
You know, the massive changes made, knockout championship suddenly out of nowhere, runoff in no time. The one thing you would say, at least, is that the GAA are in control of their own destiny. They probably have more flexibility than any other sporting organization. And, you know, the money issue is real, but, like, you know, you look at rugby at the moment, they're trying to figure out how to keep paying their players. So you'd be reasonably confident if they could pull it off last year, we'll see it in some guys this year.
Yeah.
It's just, as with all of us, we're holding our breath with this third wave. We're hoping it disappears. We're hoping we're at the back end of this horrible period in all our lives, and there's a bit more freedom. But like, one last point to make, you know, Michael Dignan was saying as well, the Offaly County Board Chairman, former All-Ireland winner with Offaly, you know, even playing the leagues, we still should be cognizant of the fact we're asking amateurs to, you know, stop on the side of the road at a designated meeting point for their sandwiches, their lunchbox, and dressing rooms are still, you know, a question mark. So there's probably an argument. It was worth it for the championship, potentially. I suspect maybe there's probably a higher proportion of players who are saying, well, look, I can live without the league for this year. And, yeah. And let's hope championship has a more enjoyable and realistic flavour to it. So that's where we are in GAA. I think, you know, that's local. That depends on how Ireland does. But they do have huge flexibility.
Yeah, Joe, listen, we appreciate your time. Joe Malloy there of Off the Ball. And you can listen to Joe and the rest of the Off the Ball crew from 7 o'clock this evening. People continuing to text in about vaccines. Vaccine left over at the end of the day. How exactly can that happen when hospitals operate 24 hours a day? There would definitely be some staff somewhere in the hospital to vaccinate. Giving the vaccine to family members is a shocking misuse. Whereas Anna says, the fault is with the HSE. What were the hospital to do if there's no protocols in place? They used common sense. 5-3-106. Keep those texts coming in at a cost of 30 cents.